What a blessing it is to be ministered to by the music as we have been ministered to this weekend. You know, when you sit under the right kind of music, you feel as if you really could go home after that number. The Lord has so powerfully used it to speak to your heart that you don't even have to listen to what is said afterwards. And that is certainly true of the music that has been a part of this conference. And I'm so very thankful for it and blessed by it. I was also sitting there thinking that I really wish that sometime my husband could come with me and sort of hide in a corner and listen to the singing of all these women together. That is so neat. And then I thought, no, wait a minute. If he were here to hear the singing, he would be here to hear the when the prizes are given out. And I'm not sure what he would think. We'll just leave that there. It's fun to be away together as ladies and just express ourselves as we feel like expressing ourselves. Huh. We don't have to always be dignified and in control. I've been so interested again to see how God has wonderfully, through his people, chosen the music, chosen so much that is just leading into the path that he has chosen for the overall theme of the program. I just sat through the wonderful presentation by Mrs. Phelps on the story of Ann Judson. I have read of the Judsons and been richly blessed and challenged, but that presentation, with so much put into Ann Judson's own words, was so convicting, so humbling, and such a reminder of how important it is that we be grounded for the difficulties that are going to come in every one of our lives. And that's where we want to focus in this session together. We talked about being grounded and not being tumbleweeds. We must be grounded for the challenges that inevitably will come into our lives. And really, the reality and the strength of our grounding is going to be challenged, and it's going to be revealed as the difficulties come. Nobody lives painlessly. Nobody lives painlessly. But how do we respond when those difficult things come? I'm sure there's no one here, if you're over the age of 10, who has not experienced hurt, disappointment, sorrow, those many, many things that make up life here on this earth. But of course, God speaks very plainly in his word, giving us exactly what we need to meet those challenges and to demonstrate the grounding that delights God's heart, that draws us closer to him, and that serves as such a splendid testimony and help to those around us. We're going to go again to the Old Testament. And again, some ladies may be thinking, what in the world, why don't we get in the New Testament and get up to date here? Because we are up to date. As I said last night, the God of the Old Testament is the God of the New Testament. But more, the people of the Old Testament are exactly the same flesh and blood that we are. God himself points to the importance of looking back and looking at these people and learning from them. 1 Corinthians 10:11 reminds us very clearly, now all these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition. We're going to go back today way, way back, even farther back in the Old Testament than we were last night. We're going to go way back to Israel in the wilderness. Tough world, wasn't it? Very, very hard years of experience. But there is such richness there, such wonderful, wonderful challenge and blessing as we consider the tough places that come to us. I'd like you to turn with me to Numbers 4. Numbers 4. I want to focus in this session on a group of people who may at first seem to be total strangers to you, or maybe very vaguely you remember reading of this group. But I want us to come up close to this group and find some of the marvelous truths and challenges, blessings and rebukes that are here in this group of people that we're going to walk with for a while. I will read the first four verses of Numbers 4. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, take the sum of the sons of Kohath from among the sons of Levi, after their families by the house of their fathers, from 30 years old and upward, even unto 50 years old, all that enter into the host, to do the work in the tabernacle of the congregation. This shall be the service of the sons of Kohath in the tabernacle of the congregation about the most holy things. Kohath, the sons of Kohath. Who were they? What was their work? That's what we're going to find out. And as we look at the sons of Kohath, we will see some wonderful principles that we should be applying on a daily basis as we come to the difficult places in life. Okay, now, obviously, you know where we are. But let's walk up beside these people who lived so long ago. And really, at every point, we can parallel ourselves. Physically, all these years ago, Israel was escaping from Egypt and moving toward the Promised Land. Spiritually, today, you and I have escaped from the Egypt of sin, and we are moving toward that glorious, glorious reality of eternity with Jesus Christ. So we are walking a parallel path here. The Israelites so long ago were taken by God through extremely difficult territory, the wilderness. An ugly, ugly world. You and I today are taken by God through, and I love that preposition. We don't stay here, but He, by His grace, is taking us through the wilderness of this world. And don't you feel that more and more, this world is a wilderness? There is nothing, nothing friendly here, is there? So here we are, walking parallel with these who lived so long ago. Now God's part was to rescue them and to lead them, and He did that faithfully, moment by moment. But those people also had a part in that walk through the wilderness. Basically, two things. They had to trust God for the overall plan and for the specific route. It's interesting, right as they came out of Egypt, physically speaking, humanly speaking, we would have thought they would have gone a certain way, but God said, And then at point after point, He was directing specifically as to where they would go. So that they had to trust God. Do I always understand the path of my life? No. No. But I must trust God for the overall plan, but also, my precious friend, for specific direction, moment by moment. But I have to do something else. Not just trust Him, but obey. Obey Him step by step through the wilderness as I move by His grace toward eternity with Him. You know, as you get into the story of Israel going through the wilderness, you find how carefully and specifically God orchestrated the whole thing. This is going to be a tough session. Hang in there, okay? I'm hungry, and I don't do well when I'm hungry. The whole journey was very specifically orchestrated by God. Nothing was an accident. Nothing. Nor is there accident in your life or mine as we live before the Lord. Listen to Numbers 9:23. Here's God reminding us how specifically He orchestrated. At the commandment of the Lord, they rested in their tents, and at the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by Moses. Now, we're talking about anywhere from 1 million to 2 or 3 million people doing all this long journey. Can you imagine what it would have been without God's orchestration? Total mayhem. But it really is just hugely blessing to see how specifically God orchestrated everything. As this verse here said, when they camped, when the sun went down and they had reached a place where God wanted them to set up their tents, they didn't just, a bunch of them, go rushing forward and say, I like that tree, I'm going to put my tent there. No. God told them ahead of time how they would place their tents. The most interesting thing about this whole thing is that, first of all, guess what was put up? The tabernacle. Absolutely. Where God dwelt. And the placement of that tabernacle indicated the centrality of God among them. Do we keep the tabernacle central in our life? Is God truly central? Every time I come to this passage, the Holy Spirit grabs my gizzard and He squeezes. God should be central to my life. Okay, so the tabernacle first, and then God said, okay, on the north there will be three tribes. On the west, three tribes. On the south, three tribes. And on the, what did I leave out? The east, three tribes. Three tribes in each direction from the central location of that tabernacle. Every time they camp, God wants things done a certain way. And we serve the same God today that these people were serving so long ago. When they traveled, they didn't just grab up their tents, roll them up, and head out in a batch. Not at all. The people themselves were organized. Certain three tribes were to go first, another three tribes to go second, until finally that fourth batch of the three tribes eating the dust. Interesting, huh? Of the other tribes ahead of them. Every three tribes assigned by God for their marching. Those were the people in general Now we're going to come to the priests. The Kohathites were among the priests. Now, when the encampment was made, the priests were also given a specific order about where they would put up their tents and where they would rest that night, or for whatever, however long God said to stay there. Okay, here's the tabernacle. We have the general tribes out here with a distance from the tabernacle, okay, ringing the tabernacle, like in a big square. Close to the tabernacle were the priestly families, specifically putting up their tents and spending that time closer to the tabernacle than the people in general. But again, specific direction where they would camp. The Levites on the east, the Kohathites on the south, the Gershonites on the west, and the Merarites on the north. Then what about the travel? God didn't only give command for the people in general, but also for where the priests were going to be and what they were going to be carrying. Okay? Here's a marching order of the priests. First of all, the Levites. And again, just as God indicated the centrality of his presence when they're stopped, so he indicates the leadership of his presence when they're moving. It is the Ark of the Covenant that goes first. It leads them all the way through all those years going through the wilderness. The Levites are carrying the Ark of the Covenant. Then behind them come the two tribes of Gershon and Merari. The Gershonites and the Merarites carry the tabernacle structure. Obviously, they've had to take it down, pack it up, and they're the second group. Now, they come behind Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. So there's a break here. There are some people, there are three tribes between the Ark of the Covenant and then the tabernacle structure. And then finally, after another three tribes and eating a lot of dust, come the Kohathites, and they are carrying the tabernacle furnishings. Okay, now that overall description doesn't really mean a whole lot to you, does it? But come in closer. And what I want us to see is the burden bearing that was a part of the journey through the wilderness. Everybody there carried burdens. Get that down. Every one of us carries burdens. But there was a tremendous difference in the burdens that were being carried. Let's think it through a bit. What are some of those differences? All right, let's think generally in the first place. The people in general, okay, all of them were actively carrying their own personal possessions. Remember, as they came out of Egypt, prior to their coming out, they had gone to the Egyptians, their neighbors, and asked of them things, gold and all this stuff. So they had possessions that they were carrying. We're talking about all the individuals, basically. But you know, when you are dealing with your own personal possessions, they mean something to you, don't they? In a very special way, these were precious. This was all that they had on earth. So yes, probably they got tired carrying these things, whatever they were, their possessions. And maybe they got some raw places rubbed, but nevertheless, they cared deeply about what they were carrying because they were their personal belongings. They were meaningful to them, weren't they? Personally meaningful. What about the priests? they were assigned special additional burdens, but also God had a different plan, a specific plan, for each of those special people. Now, wait a minute. Additional burdens. Who are the priests? Those who are closest to God. Those who are the servants of the Lord, specifically called servants of the Lord. Ladies, I can't tell you how many times I go back to this passage. When I learn of yet another ministry person who has been given some very, very lumpy load. Special to God's heart. And so allowed, assigned special burdens. But even here there was a difference. What are those priestly burdens? Well, like we said, here's the ark. It's out there in front. It was heavy. It had to be carried a certain way. It meant weight. It meant weariness and all of that because it was a burden. But wait, it was also sort of glamorous, wasn't it? What did the ark look like? It was covered with gold. Can you imagine how that Mideastern sun hitting the Ark of the Covenant, marching out there, it would have been gorgeous, wouldn't it? Woo! Hey, so the Levites had a little encouragement right there on their shoulders, didn't they? And probably they felt just, you know, just a little bit nice about being part of the Levites and leading. They weren't eating anybody's dust. I mean, they had some positives they could think of there. Well, what about the tabernacle structure with the Merarites and the Gershonites? Okay, what are we talking about? You know that structure of the tabernacle just as much as I do. Heavy poles, heavy hangings, heavy, bulky stuff. It would have meant a lot of labor, wouldn't it? For all of that moving mile after mile after mile, year after year after year. But they didn't carry it all on their shoulders. God gave the Gershonites 2 carts and 4 oxen, and he gave the Merarites 4 carts and 8 oxen. Huh! They had help. They had help in moving the burdens through the wilderness. Okay, now we come to the Kohathites. What did they carry? What did they carry? The tabernacle furnishings. The stuff inside the tabernacle. Very different. They have nothing to display, and they have no help for the burden they're assigned to carry. Referring to the carts and the oxen that were given to the Merarites and Gershonites, Numbers 7:9 says this, "But unto the sons of Kohath he gave none, because the service of the sanctuary belonging unto them was that they should bear upon their shoulders." They were to feel specifically the weight of those things they were carrying. Okay, now let's detail what they were carrying. What in the world are we talking about? I'm going to condense here, Numbers 4, verses 5 through 14. Okay, tabernacle furnishings. And God himself tells us that they were holy things and precious things, but they were also lumpy. And they meant some challenge as these Kohathites carried them. All right, here's how Aaron and his sons went into the tabernacle every time they were to set out. And they had a specific routine God had declared that they should follow, having to do with all those furnishings. I'll go really quickly through this. Tabernacle of the showbread. They spread a blue cloth over it, put on it, dishes, pans, bowls, pitchers, and showbread, covered that with a scarlet cloth, covered that with badger skins. Oh, boy, it's getting heavy, isn't it? And inserted carry poles. The lampstand, they covered it with a blue cloth, put on that. Lampstands, wick stands, trays, oil vessels, covered it with badger skins, put it on a carry pole. Lumpy. The golden altar, cover it with blue cloth, cover with badger skins, insert the carry poles. The utensils of service, cover with blue cloth, cover with badger skins, put on a carry beam. The ashes of the altar, cover with a purple cloth, put on it, fire pans, forks, shovels, basins, and so forth. Cover that with badger skins, insert the carry poles. And then, okay, after all this preparation, everything's all covered up. Then the Kohathites come in, and they pick up the burden and begin to carry it. And this is where the Lord just really, really grabs me and shakes me. The Kohathites had to carry their burden without ever seeing it. They did not understand what they were carrying. Numbers 4:15, and when Aaron and his sons have made an end of covering the sanctuary and all the vessels of the sanctuary, as the camp is to set forward after that, the sons of Kohath shall come to bear it, but they shall not touch any holy thing, lest they die. And Numbers 4:20, but they shall not go in to see when the holy things are covered, lest they die. They never saw what they were carrying. My precious friend, have not you known a burden, the meaning of which you could not see? You could not understand why there was a lump there, why the cutting of the corner of that thing was so intense. You could not understand, you could not see, neither could the Kohathites. Was it a short journey? 40 years. 40 years. You know, if you know that you only have to carry a burden a little way, you can tough it out. But when it goes on and on and on, 40 years. Now, not all of the Kohathites were positive in their response to God's assignment. Remember who Korah was? He was a problem, wasn't he? Not only rebelling himself, but also inciting 250 prominent men against Moses' leadership. But listen what Moses said to them when he faced him. You know who Korah was? He was the grandson of Kohath. The grandson. He was a Kohathite who would have been carrying burdens assigned by God. Listen to what Moses said unto him. Numbers 16:9. Seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them? The phrase that jumps out at from that section at me is to bring you unto himself. That's God's purpose in the burden he allows, the burden he assigns, to bring us unto himself. My precious friend, isn't it true that when you are most baffled, when you are most cut and bruised by the burden, that that's when you rush to the heart of God? Not when everything's sunny and easy and fun, but when the burden settles on. Well, walking with the Kohathites, I have to ask myself some questions. How do I respond to the burdens? Do I have the kind of grounding that is going to give me the trust, the obedience, the reliance to move forward carrying that burden? Am I going to recognize that this is God's entrustment to me? These are holy things, precious things. Am I going to accept his assignment? And yes, am I going to rejoice in the nearness opportunity that this burden gives to me? And will I faithfully serve God and minister to others through my burdens? God doesn't just want me to have resignation to a lumpy load. Instead, he wants me to be so soaking in this precious book that I can rejoice in the lumpy load. Why? Because I find here the wonderful expression of God's loving heart that entrusted that burden to me. 2 Corinthians 4:7 reminds us our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. And if we're grounded, we can live out Colossians 1:11, strengthened with all might, according to his glorious power, unto all patience and long-suffering with joyfulness. Are we grounded? Are we so firmly grounded that God's grace can flow into our roots and make us able to bear even the lumpiest of loads?